Well, thanks everybody for coming. I'm Les Reed, I'm the political correspondent of the Coventry Telegraph. We're very thankful to the Warwick University, in particular Peter Dunn, for turning this round at short notice. In addition to the people here, we've got a live blog going on the Coventry Telegraph website. We're expecting several hundred to be following this debate. We're hoping that the debate will be an opportunity to get behind some of the spin and propaganda that we hear at the national level. Our panellists in arguing in favour of no to AV are people should take a photograph of this. It's a very rare opportunity to see two experienced Coventry City Councillors, one Labour and one Tory, sitting side by side. Both very experienced City Councillors. Phil Townsend is a Labour City Councillor and Tim Sorden is a Conservative. Arguing for yes to AV, we've got Kevin Mayton, again a Coventry City Council Councillor with considerable experience, and Professor Dennis Leach from the Department of Economics at the University here, who has done quite a lot of research and is going to tell us about his research into AV. So I think we'll start. The format, I should say, is we're going to have about 3 minutes or up to 3 minutes from each panellist, and then it's over to the floor. So we're going to start, I think, with Tim.
Yep.
Tim Sorden arguing for no to AV.
Thank you very much, Les. I hope you can all hear me at the back there, to save me using this contraption. There are four main reasons why I'm opposed to AV. Firstly, first past the post is a simple system, as opposed to AV, which is a confusing mess of preferences, probabilities and permutations. Major democracies like the United States, Canada and India use first past the post. The only countries in the world using AV are Fiji, Papua New Guinea and Australia. Fiji's planning to get rid of it, and 6 out of 10 Australians want to get rid of it as well. The second reason is that first past the post is effective. Throughout our history, it has generally produced strong governments, whereas AV is more than likely to produce endless coalitions. Thirdly, first past the post is cheap to administer, unlike AV, which is expensive, bureaucratic, and for most voters, almost impossible to understand. And fourthly, first past the post is very much to do with our history. 2 centuries ago, voting was limited to the privileged few. Generations of campaigners have fought to change that, to give us the democracy we have today, based on us all having an equal say, one man, one vote. Not one man having 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 votes, depending on which fringe candidate you vote for first. In my view, AV is quite absurd and morally wrong that the person finishing third could actually be declared the winner. As Nick Clegg said, AV is a miserable little compromise, and I agree with him.
Thank you very much, Tim. Now over to Kevin.
Right. Thank you very much. I'm Kevin Mayton, I'm a councillor on Coventry City Council and have been involved in the Yes campaign, but not as somebody who's analysed it and has got lots of detail, and certainly I'm not here with a prepared speech to tell you why it's yes to AV for me. Clearly, it's about revitalising our democracy. One of the issues, and many of you will have already seen this, we've moved from 4 decades ago where maybe 90-95% of people voted for one of the two main parties. I was thinking this morning, because I'm old enough to remember, in the 60s, it was the swingometer that started. The swingometer was something that Bob McKenzie came along with, and it was only between Conservative and Labour. The world today is very different. You've now got only 65% of people, roughly, who are voting for the two main political parties. And it seems to me that means 35% of people feel disengaged and are not involved closely with the electoral system. So how can we change that? Well, the key thing to remember is that we're not looking at a whole range of options. There are only two to consider through the referendum. You either vote yes to the AV system as described, or you vote no. You don't start looking at other proportional representation systems. You don't look at AV plus. We are only faced with two and looking at to see whether those are the things that will make a difference. Some of the things that Tim was saying is that it's a simple system, first past the post. I think it's patronising to be able to tell people that using exactly the same ballot paper as you would get with a first-past-the-post system, and instead of putting a cross, you simply put those people you want to give a preference to. 1 and 2, 1, 2 and 3, or 1, 2, 3 and 4. It doesn't seem difficult to me, and I think to say it's complicated is patronising. The other strange thing is that councils up and down the country have been under no overall control for a number of years. It's not difficult. And one of the key elements of having the AV system is to encourage politicians to work more closely together, not to get scared and think, well, we're either in total power or we're not. It's about looking at different ways of working. And I think, for me, one of the key things about AV is it will change the culture of elections, it will change the culture of politicians, so that there won't be so much confrontation and we'll work more closely together.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and over to you, Phil.
Thanks, Les. I'm an agnostic no. I've hovered, I've vacillated between being in favour of it or being against it. And I've listened to the arguments, and some of them have been impressive, and frankly, some of them have been incredibly shallow. Whatever you do in this referendum, I'd say this, don't vote in a particular way because you want to do down Ed Miliband. Don't vote in a particular way because you want to vote down and do down David Cameron or Nick Clegg. Do it because you believe that it's the right system that you should be supporting. Having said that, I shall vote no on Thursday, and the reasons for it are not particularly sophisticated, but they are as basic as this. First of all, if it isn't bust, do you need to fix it? Now, what's the evidence to show that it's bust? Well, I'll tell you this. Last year, I was up for re-election for the fifth time for the City Council in Lower Stoke as the Labour candidate, and I have to tell you, I knocked on a lot of doors last April and May. And people talked to me about the economy, they talked to me about jobs, they talked to me about interest rates, they talked to me about Afghanistan, Iraq, a whole range of issues. But I tell you truthfully, nobody, but nobody, mentioned electoral reform. So I have to say to you that I think that it's something that's captivated opinion for those of us that are interested in politics and not more widely. And I'll tell you, I can remember back to the last referendum, I think the only other referendum that we've ever had in this country, on whether or not we should continue to be members of what was then the common market. And sadly, I wasn't old enough to vote at the time. You may find that difficult to believe, but it's true. And I can tell you that at that time, you would have filled an auditorium like this with people very, very passionate about it one way or the other. So it's not captured public imagination in that sense. Professor Leach will correct me if I'm wrong, but I read an article in the Sunday Times yesterday, so it must be true, that said it would have produced no different outcome in something like the last 10 general elections in terms of who the government would have been. There would have been changes in the number of members of Parliament within Parliament, but not any different government, other than that at the last election it would have opened up the possibility for a Labour, Liberal, Democrat coalition. And I suppose that the other arguments I would say to you very quickly are these. One, lots of MPs get elected with more than 50% of the vote under the existing system. And I have to tell you, they're not lazy. They're not indifferent to their constituents. They hold lots of surgeries, they take up local issues, they campaign on issues, they promote debate. So the argument that, you know, if you've got to reach out to more people to secure that 50% mandate, I don't buy that. I think that there are good MPs and there are bad MPs, and the voting system will make very little difference to that. And where MPs have large majorities, if they misbehave, they get chucked out. We saw that at the last election with Labour MPs who'd run foul of the expenses regime. We've seen it with Conservative MPs, a chap called Nick Hawkins, who was the MP for Surrey, rock-solid Conservative constituency, wasn't felt to be engaging in the constituency, was deselected by his local party, and surprise, surprise, replaced by Nick Hurd, son of the former Foreign Secretary. So in those circumstances, there are mechanisms which exist within political parties to change things. And finally, I'd say this. When you go and put your vote on that ballot paper, if you vote for the Labour candidate, it's presumably because you want a Labour councillor or a Labour MP or a Conservative councillor or a Conservative MP to be elected. When your friend says to you in the pub tonight, what do you want to drink? And you say, I'll have a pint of lager, please. And he brings you back a scotch and lemonade. Well, let me say to you, that's not what you've asked for, and it's not what you've got. And so the existing system, for all its frailties, I support. And I have to tell you, finally, that I think that there are far more important constitutional issues that we should be concerned with. For example, an unelected second chamber in the House of Lords. So this is not top of the priorities, so I shall be voting no in the referendum on Thursday, and I urge you to do likewise.
Thanks very much, Phil. Over to you, Dennis.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Les. I teach a course in voting theory in the university to second and third year students, and I'm an active member of a research group called Voting Power and Procedures that looks at all matters to do with voting. Last summer we had a workshop in knowing that this referendum was going to come up in the UK, and one of our members was very alarmed that AB was possibly going to be introduced, and he thought we should have a thorough investigation into all the possible voting methods that could be used. There are many voting methods that have been proposed for electing a single winner when there are three or more candidates. AB is one of them, first past the post is one of them, and so on, there are many others. And we had a whole conference on this in a chateau in France, at the end of the conference, somebody said, let's have a vote on which voting method is the best. And so we had a vote, and first past the post, and this was a group of international experts on voting theory from America and all over Europe, and we had a vote, and first past the post received zero votes, and AB was the runner up. AB was the second in the vote, and it got quite a lot of votes. Now, AB, as I said, is a flawed method of voting. It's not proportional representation. Let me emphasise that. There are many arguments in favour of replacing the inadequate voting system that we use at the moment for the House of Commons by one where MPs are chosen in strict proportion to the party preferences of the election, which is what proportional representation is. And there's a debate to be had about this. But you know, now is not the time to have that debate. In my view, it's a no-brainer that when we're electing a parliament, it should reflect the opinions of the country. So I would strongly support a move to proportional representation. But of course, we don't have that. We have this, what Nick Clegg called a miserable little compromise. The Liberals would favour proportional representation, but they've got this referendum on AV. Now, both AV and First Past the Post have serious drawbacks when there are, as I said, when there are three or more serious candidates. If there are only two candidates, if it's just Labour and Conservative, then First Past the Post is fine. But when there are three, then things get very complicated. And this has now become the normal case. And in this situation, AV has advantages. And I would argue that there are two advantages. One is strengthening liberal democracy. It makes a substantial contribution, in my view, to the liberal idea of democracy. And secondly, as Kevin has said, improving the political culture. Now, we've known since 1951, when the economist Kenneth Arrow published his so-called impossibility theorem, that there can be no voting method that fairly and consistently enables the popular will to be reflected in government decisions. So, the idea of sort of the populist idea of democracy is a dream which cannot be fulfilled in practice. And the theory of social choice, which started with Arrow's theorem, undermined this populist view of democracy. But we've also known for much longer, for 250 years, since the French philosopher de Bourdieu, in the Enlightenment, just before the French Revolution, that first past the post, where the result depends only on the plurality of the votes, the relative number of votes, not the majority. It doesn't require a majority for someone to be elected under first past the post, just more votes than anybody else. We've known that this can result in the worst candidate being elected. And this is called Borders paradox in the literature. Now, when we consider voting methods from the point of view of the other major justification of voting, apart from populism, liberal democracy, then the situation is different. And I believe that there is a strong case for AB in that situation. Liberal democracy sees voting as a means of protecting the rights of the people against dictatorship. Elections provide a discipline on representatives. So the idea is that you can vote them out. If your representative is corrupt or an extremist or incompetent, then you can vote them out. And AV makes it easier to do that. So in my view, AV has a lot to offer from that point of view, from the point of view of the liberal view of democracy. Because we know from social choice theory that the absolutely least popular candidate can never be elected under AV. You could imagine, it's hard to imagine a racist or fascist candidate being elected under AV, because that candidate would have to get a majority against one of the mainstream candidates. Whereas under first past the post, it can happen quite easily. And it does happen that the least popular individual candidate does get elected. And we've seen, there's never been a BNP MP in this country, but we've seen it happen in county council elections in Lancashire, with a BNP candidate being elected with 30% of the votes, and presumably about 70% against that candidate, simply because the votes of the three main parties were split, allowing the minority candidate to win. So that's, in my view, a very strong argument in favour of AB. So AB does not necessarily elect the best candidate, but it prevents the worst candidate being elected. And the second major advantage of AV is that it removes the dilemma facing each voter when they go to the polls of having to make a choice between whether to vote with their heart or their head, whether to vote for the candidate they want, they support most, or to vote expressively, if you like, or to vote tactically for against the candidate they want to keep out. And this is a perennial dilemma in many constituencies. And in my view, AB removes that problem, because you can vote with your first preference for your preferred candidate and then use your second preference to vote for the candidate who you would vote for if your preferred candidate was eliminated. So it does provide that ability to... It frees up voters to vote sincerely, and I think it would transform the political culture, because we would know what people think, what the electorate think. At the moment we don't, because of this tactical voting problem, and I think it would make the case for, sorry, and I think if we move to AB, then it would make the case even stronger for moving to proportional representation.
Dennis, can I pick you up on a couple of things? What's to say that tactical voting will end under AB? And secondly, while most academic opinion accepts that this won't be, in Saeed Abbas's view, a vote for the BNP, it won't put a BNP candidate in place, is there a possibility that it gives a little bit more power to the voters of the BNP in expressing their second preferences?
Sorry, what was your first question again?
The first question is about tactical voting.
Yes, well, I mean, tactical voting, we know that all voting methods are susceptible to manipulation. Tactical voting can happen with every, as far as we know, every voting method.
Doesn't that weaken your argument in that case?
Well, no, because it makes it much harder to vote tactically. At the moment, it's almost a requirement to vote tactically if your candidate is the third place candidate, and you know the likely winner is your least preferred candidate, then you know you're wasting your vote if you don't do it tactically. So it's almost part of the system to do that. Whereas under AV, it's not clear how to vote tactically. I mean, theoretically, if voters have
people
full
could be
information
guided,
about
people could be guided on how to
well,
vote.
People would need to know the preferences of all the other voters. And it's very hard in practice to implement something like that. I mean, there are cases under first past the post where people have voted tactically and then regretted what they've done, you know, because they haven't understood what the intentions of the other voters were. It requires a lot of information. It requires full information about
and what about
behaviour.
The potential to give perhaps at the margins a little bit more power to BNP voters in the way they express a second preference?
Only if the Taxpayers' Alliance are standing, I think. I mean, you've got to put yourself in the mind of a BNP voter and be able to think, who else would you vote for? And I think it's very difficult to think that sort of person would easily find a second preference or third preference that would make any difference. Obviously, it's not impossible, but that's not the issue. The issue is around, I'd much rather be interested in somebody who's got a strong environmental strand and would want to vote for, say, a Green candidate and thinks, well, they don't do that well. They're not going to get elected. So do I decide to vote Green, which is what I want to do, or do I vote for somebody else who's got a few environmental credentials but isn't exactly what I want to vote for? Now, under AV, you'd simply vote for, say, the Green candidate, one, but if they don't get in, you can put two against somebody who's got a clear environmental issue and meets some of what you want. That's the key element, and I think this question about what a BNP voter will do is simply a side issue that detracts from the general thrust of what AV is trying to achieve.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, the argument is that if somebody voted for the BNP, okay, let's suppose there's somebody, you know, there's a first round of voting, as it were, nobody gets a majority. So therefore the system is to elect the candidate who gets the fewest votes, which maybe is the BNP. So what should happen in the second round of voting? You seem to be suggesting that because somebody voted BNP in the first round, that therefore they should forfeit their vote in the second round and not take part in the second round of voting. You know, I mean, if you were having a series of eliminating ballots, which is the way that the political parties elect their leaders, I think, then you would not remove somebody from the second round of voting because they voted for the eliminated candidate in the first round. It's a one system of one person, one vote, and you know, that's an important principle.
Let's move on then. From the no side, we heard Tim Sourdin say that this would lead to more coalitions, I think. That's often been dismissed as a bit of a popular myth. We've got somebody from Cage here, Dr. David Hugh Jones, who I think can challenge Tim on that notion that this will, one, lead to more coalitions, and two, increase the number of Liberal Democrat MPs in Parliament.
Yes, okay, so I'm David Hugh Jones. I'm a researcher at Cage. I'm very interested in the AV campaign, and I'm also, as a political scientist, I wanted to know what it would actually do. So I decided to basically simulate the 2010 election, run it again under AV. And to do that, I went to my old friends at Essex University Department of Government and got their British Elections Study, which is just coming out, which is a big survey of the British electorate. And one of the things they did after the campaign was they surveyed thousands of voters and they asked them, well, how would you vote under AV? How would you have voted under AV? Rank your preferences. And they provided like a fake ballot form, so you could write down, you know, first choice, second choice, third choice. Using that, you can basically simulate the 2010 election under a different electoral system. The only sort of minor glitch is that you have to divide up the voters by how they voted in the actual election, and then see what their preferences are. under AV, and then you can apply those preferences to the vote shares in each constituency. So there's the technical details. So I did that, and I got some first results out. And the basic story is that not much changes. So under the first past the post election in England alone, the Conservatives got mainland Great Britain alone, the Conservatives got 305 seats, Labour got 258, the Lib Dems got 57. I ran my simulation. The Conservatives got 296 seats, Labour still got 258, the Lib Dems got 67. So basically the Lib Dems gained about 10 seats. And importantly, this still wouldn't have been enough to allow for a Liberal Democrat Labour coalition. So it would have still been that the Liberal Democrats and Labour on their own wouldn't have had an absolute majority in Parliament. Okay, I then thought, okay, let's go a bit further with this. So I split my voters up by their constituencies. You see, a guy who votes Labour in a constituency where Labour are coming first, probably a Labour supporter, but a guy who votes Labour in a situation where Labour are coming third, and it's the Conservatives versus the Lib Dems coming first and second, that guy must be a Labour supporter, right? He's a real loyalist to both of them, even when we're coming third. So I split the voters up like that. I ran my simulations again. Results were even more surprising. Now you actually have the Conservatives gaining 5 seats, Labour losing a few, and the Liberal Dems gaining about 4. So you can actually have a situation where the Conservatives would have got more under AV than under first past the post. So what's the take-home from these results? Okay, I don't think anyone, as I think you said, no one should vote for this system to support one party or the other. So let's just look at what it'll do. And I think the answer is it's a relatively small change. It's not necessarily going to make the system much more representative, as Dennis said. On the other hand, it's also not necessarily going to lead to many more coalitions. I don't think there's any evidence for that, and in Australia, they've had fewer coalitions than we have over the past century, I believe. The main thing I think it will do is, as Dennis again said, it will change how people vote. People will feel freer to express their real preferences with their first vote than maybe vote for one of the big parties in the second. And personally, I'm in favour of that. So can I ask a question to all of you guys? If you believe what I'm saying, this is a small incremental change. So to the yes camp, what are you so excited about? And to the no camp, what are you so afraid of?
Let's take the no camp then. They've been silent for the last 20 minutes. Respond to David's notion that this won't lead to more coalitions, first of all.
Well, all you've demonstrated is that in the 2010 election, there would still have been a coalition, as there is a coalition, but it actually doesn't demonstrate that there wouldn't have been more coalitions in the past. So you've only gone on one set of elections. I just want to make another point. You mentioned Australia. One has to then say, well, if Australia's the system's so good, why do the Australians want to get rid of it? Because the surveys have shown that 6 out of 10 Australians don't like AV, they want to get rid of it. So that's not exactly a good reason for having it in this country. The second point I wanted to make was that, whilst I don't doubt your research, what you asked people to do was to list their preferences. I'm not so sure. I mean, if it comes to AV and that was the system that was introduced, I would vote Conservative. I wouldn't put any other preferences down. I don't want anybody else. I want to vote Conservative. And what all AV does...
That was also true in the actual survey. People did that.
But they were pressurised, I think, into putting preferences, whereas I think once the system is argued through, people, I would certainly be encouraging Conservative voters not to put any other preferences down, because we don't want anybody else but the people that we want to support. The other issue I wanted to raise was that what AV means, and I did mention it before, is that fringe voters, those voting for the monster-raving Looney Party and the BNP, get more votes than the rest of us. They do. They get more votes.
Not
so
true.
Someone voting for the monster-raving Looney Party might put the BNP as their second choice. When he gets knocked out, they get their third choice and their fourth choice. I don't think that's right. One man, one vote is the system that I believe in, and that you should vote for the person that you want, and not, as Dennis said, and I did find this a little negative, was that Dennis said, well, it's more about keeping the person you don't like out than getting the person you want in. Well, I don't think that's a particularly good reason for changing a voting system.
Thank you, Tim. That notion that some voters get more than one choice has been challenged widely, and over to the yes side to challenge it now.
It is ridiculous, because what happens is that, let's say you've got somebody who's a fringe candidate who gets 100 votes. Under AV, their 100 votes get redistributed. Yeah. That's true. But everybody's vote gets counted a second time. So it's not that those 100 votes have got some special magical power. All that happens is they are transferred, and then the counting starts all over again. So not only is that a second count for that 100 votes, but also anybody who voted Labour or Conservative, all their votes are counted again. So it's not true to say that if you're a fringe candidate, you keep on getting an additional vote. You get an additional vote each round that's happening.
And Dennis, do you want to add to that?
Well, I mean,
isn't it the case that every voter has their vote counted once?
Yes, every voter has their vote counted once. Yes, that's right. And if their candidate, their first preference candidate, is not if nobody wins, so nobody has a majority, so there has to be a second count, a second ballot, although it's not another ballot, it's simply the votes are transferred. And so it seems to me elementary that all voters should be able to participate in that second count. I mean, and of course, if we think of the way that the Conservatives elect their leader, I mean, one thinks of the election of David Cameron. Of course, the winner on the first past the post would have been David Davis. He got more votes than David Cameron. But nobody got a majority, didn't get a majority. And so they eliminated the fringe candidate, who was Ken Clark. Mm-hmm. Now, are we saying that those votes of Ken Clark shouldn't, or the people who voted for Ken Clark should not have been able to vote again in the second ballot? And of course, most of them voted for David Cameron. So it seems to me this argument is a complete red herring.
Thanks, Dennis. Phil.
Okay. The answer to your question is, no, I'm not afraid of anything at all. We've got a coalition government now. So you can have coalition governments, as we have done, okay, for the first time since the end of the Second World War, and those were slightly unusual circumstances, but before that, coalitions during the end of the previous century and the beginning of the 20th century were not that unusual. So I'm not against that. I said I was agnostic about it. If we end up with AV, just like when we have elections in the Labour Party, I shall use whatever votes are available to me where I think that they can be of influence. Where I'm profoundly against it, I mean, I make no apologies for this. I think that the BNP are a force for evil, and I believe that the way in which you deal with it is to challenge it through the political process, and I don't want to see anything that allows them to show in areas like Coventry, where we've got a good history of being able to persuade people to exclude them from the political debate. I don't want to see anything that's going to see second or third preferences for other candidates lift their vote. And I say if people want coalitions, you can get one under the existing system. What I'm not sure about is what we'd end up with. You end up voting for one person, not getting another. And can I just say very quickly, if there's something about the force of the argument. In Brighton, the Green Party got an MP elected against the odds. In Kidderminster, back in 2001, Labour lost a seat in Wyre Forest when the independent hospital consultant stood against David Locke, who was the Labour MP there. You can change things. You've got to be prepared to go out and make your arguments on policy.
But Phil, the BNP are voting, asking people to vote no. As are the Taxpayers Alliance, as are the entire Murdoch press, and as David Cameron and the rest of the Tories. I mean, I find it strange that there are people from the Labour Party who are aligning with those forces of darkness. And I think in some ways, the very fact that Margaret Thatcher was against AV should be enough to make people feel that it's right to vote yes. But I think that the argument has to be more clearly made. But, this thing about, I think it's trying to sidetrack the argument. BNP are campaigning for no.
Okay, I think we're going to have to wrap it up now. Thanks, everybody, for coming. It's been a very interesting debate. And it's been reported live on the blog. That will remain on our website well into tomorrow, I think. So if you want to read our coverage, that's there. Have to thank our panellists for what's been a fantastic discussion, and for David's contribution too, and again to the university for so speedily turning this around and hosting this debate. Many thanks.